Hey folks, just a quick note about this podcast. We had all kinds of technical gremlins the morning that we were recording this at the table. And so bad, in fact, that the recording is not usable, which is extraordinary. But in any case, what I decided to do, rather than have it just be a missing one, because we're sort of working with some companion ideas to the previous week, is I would just re-record it at home. So if it seems a little flat to you, perhaps it's because the interaction that would normally be part of something like this at the table isn't there, and the environment isn't there, and kids yelling in the background isn't there, and you know, all those things that make it feel like home. But I'm just going to go through what I talked about in the talky bit. So if you're following along with the ideas as they unfold, you've got access to this. It doesn't happen that often that I set out in one direction when I'm getting a talky bit ready and then just get completely derailed and end up going in a different direction entirely. But that's what happened on this particular week. And that was largely a result of reconsidering one of the components of what I was planning to do. If you were around last week or you listened to last week's podcast, you might remember that I put the whole gang of us through a late 20th century Christian rock song, and I made us listen to the whole thing. Although I seem to recall reminding people that at the table you can leave the room anytime. And then I took it to task in ways that one might even consider unkind. I don't know any of the people in that band personally. I mean none of them any ill will, but I did give some of the ideas from that song a bit of a rough ride. I don't feel especially apologetic about that. Maybe that's just a character flaw. In any case, I'm going to play another song video this morning. Now, unlike the song from last week, which, you know, in its day was a big hit, this one is fresh and new, and unlike last week's, it is thoroughly unknown. I pretty much guarantee you will have never heard of it. So I just want to set it up a little bit. When it became clear this summer that my dad was not only dying, but that his death would likely be soon, my brother Greg wrote him a song. Now, Greg is somebody that I admire for lots of reasons, including his ability to wrap a song around pretty big ideas and his ability to wrap a song around emotions that are both tender and strong. And when Greg talks about this song, he basically says that he had things he wanted to say to Dad, but he knew that there was no way he could ever pull it off in person without just falling apart. And so he figured maybe if he wrote a song, that might help. And then having written the song, he realized that there was he had the same problem. Like, there was no way he was going to be able to sing it to Dad live. He'd just never get through it. So a buddy of his, a guy named Dan Cranfield from Village Guitars and Amps in Saskatoon, shot a video of it for him, which was fabulous because Dad loved his iPad. It was something he could access all kinds of things on without moving very much toward the end of his life. Moving caused him a lot of pain. So Greg put it up on YouTube, so Dad could watch it, and then they watched it together. Greg's daughter, Jazzy, told me that he could never make it through the whole tune when he practiced it at home, but when he went in to shoot it, he just laid it down in one take. So if you do look this up, what you see is one straight live take with live audio. If you want to check it out as part of following along with this, you can find it on YouTube, Village Amps and Guitars, Village Guitars and Amps. I can't remember which way around. The artist's name is Greg Plett, and the song title is Look What You Started Now. So in our gathering, we watched that video together, and it's pretty emotional. Greg's singing it to Dad not that long before he dies, and it's kind of this legacy song. It's a song about how do you start something that outlives you. You know? Anyway, I was sort of on the path of considering some further ideas about living forever, which we talked about last week, and I'll come back to another time. But when I watched that video again, what was calling out to me to explore wasn't the questions around eternal hereafter. It was more along the lines of how do we live so we start something? How do we live so we contribute to something now that has some longevity to it, something we might call a legacy if we want to use a kind of old-fashioned word for it. Now, that whole idea of doing things so we leave a legacy might be pretty easy to critique. All we have to do is look around at the sorts of things that folks with money or influence choose to do that are sort of visible legacy projects. And I'm not being critical of those projects categorically. I think there are a lot of what might be called legacy projects that are doing tremendous good in the world. But that can seem kind of like rich person stuff, you know, having schools and hospitals and foundations named after you and, you know, feeding whole countries, what have you. But what about the rest of us? You know, what about us ordinary folks? And do we need to think about leaving a legacy as being personally remembered? Like, is this really about having people not forget us when we're gone? Or to put it another way, is this business of leaving a legacy just all about me? So in the middle of thinking about all this stuff, another singer-songwriter that I know, Alana Lewandowski, who has more than a little bit of a bent toward the mystic, sent around a poem by Rainer Maria Rilke. And that poem sort of shifted my focus again. I'm going to read it for you. It's short. It's from a Rilke collection called Book of Hours. The poem is called Go to the Limits of Your Longing. God speaks to each of us as he makes us, and then walks with us silently out of the night. These are the words we dimly hear. You, sent out beyond your recall, go to the limits of your longing. Embody me, flare up like a flame, and make big shadows I can move in. Let everything happen to you, beauty and terror. Just keep going. No feeling is final. Don't let yourself lose me. Nearby is the country they call life. You will know it by its seriousness. Give me your hand. So that's where that idea in the blurb this week about making big shadows came from. And I found myself continually coming back to that stanza of the poem where Rilke writes, embody me, flare up like a flame and make big shadows I can move in. It feels to me like there's a lot in there. Because I believe that one of the most remarkable ideas in the Bible is this idea that humans are the home of the divine. And because I believe that, having a poet like Rilke give God a line like, embody me, speaks really powerfully to me. I think this idea is very close to the core message of traditional Christianity, this thought that it's a human womb in which God chooses to make a home, a human life in which God is present in history. And then we have all the gospel stories that relay accounts of such ordinary life events as hunger or uncertainty about where home is, or oppression by powerful military powers or family struggles, and on and on and on. The gospel stories present all of those things as being part of the story of God alive in human form. And these stories all tell me that being called to embody God isn't a strange or a weird thing. It's extraordinary, to be sure, but it is also for everyone. And if I think about God as goodness, as love itself, and I think about places where I see that flare up in the world, it makes me feel joyful about just how deeply and constantly present God is in everyday life. If you want to kind of bring that idea home, just think about this the next time you see love or kindness in action. You see love or kindness right in front of you in everyday life. You just think, God is here. I'm not talking about heroics. Like, I'm talking about the smile in the grocery line, the you first in any line at all, the would you like help with that? I think I've overheard probably half a dozen times at least in the last few days, I've heard a total stranger offer another total stranger help. I just, to me, that feels like what Rilke's writing about. That feels like God flaring up like a flame in the world. That's the presence of God in the world. And when we see suffering or injustice, we can think the same. We can think there's the presence of God in the world, because as the psalmist reminds us, it doesn't matter if we make our bed in a place that feels like hell to us or in a place that feels like a blissful high, God is there. embody me is a calling that we're all made to answer. It's one we're all wired for. We might not always be open to it, but we're always made for it. And when we do open ourselves to it, what happens? Well, to use the image Rilke uses, the presence of God flares up like a flame. Now, this is where the imagery gets really fascinating to me. When I think about the love of God flaring up in the world, I tend to think about it as light or warmth. I mean, it's the kind of thing that banishes darkness. And I know where those images come from. They've been forged in my imagination by decades of theologies that use that language and that use it because the Bible uses it. This is another one of the great ideas about God that we find in Christianity's sacred text and in the Hebrew sacred texts. But in particular, the Gospel of John says it this way. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. The Word was with God in the beginning. And through him, all things were made. Without him, nothing was made that has been made. In him was life, and that life was the light of all humankind. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. That's a powerful and hopeful image, right? Light present in all of humanity, sending darkness packing. I mean, that's awesome. Who wouldn't want to celebrate that? But here's the thing about that image for me. As a photographer, I know that when you shine a bright light into any space, it doesn't make the darkness go away so much as it relocates it. Another way to think about this is the brighter the light, the harsher the shadows. That could sound like a kind of a wet blanket on the vibrant possibility of God being present everywhere, but it's not. For me, this is the genius of this poem at work, because the shadows made by the flaring up of the light of God's presence are not something that undoes that presence. They just make another place where God can move. Listen to the stanza from the poem again. Embody me. Flare up like a flame and make big shadows I can move in. Let me bring this back to that question I asked earlier. How do we live so we start something, so we contribute to something now that has some longevity to it, something we might call a legacy or think of in that way? To put it another way, how can we embody God in ways that cause the presence of love to flare up in the world? Well, there are probably, a million ways to answer that question. There are as many ways to answer that question as there are ways to enact love. But for today, what I want to do is pick up on a couple of the images in Greg's song to stir our imagination about this. I think the opening line of Greg's song, which is a song about legacy, about starting something good that keeps on going long after we're gone, is a pretty good pointer. In the first line of the song, Greg sings, "It's a fearful thing to love what death can take. It's a fearful thing to love what death can take." And then he just stays in that idea space for the whole verse. He doesn't really let up, right until he sings in the last line of that stanza, "It isn't like we have a choice. We face a lonesome night." Nobody gets out of this alive. it's a verse about our mortality. But then he starts the next verse with this line. "It's a holy thing to love what death can touch." And he goes on to sing about hope. In his own way, and without consulting me as his older brother or Rilke the poet, or perhaps, anyone at all other than his creative muse, Greg is singing about both the flaring up of love in the world and the shadow it casts. He's singing about my dad loving him and him loving my dad and how death can seem like a shadow over it all, but how that shadow is where God lives and moves. If we want to live in a way that extends beyond our time here on earth, we need to be willing to both shine the light of love and to see that God moves in the shadows it casts. To love is to exacerbate the ache of loss. But to see the bliss of love as being the presence of God, and not to see that presence also in the ache of loss, for instance, is to radically shrink the possibilities of what God is love and love is everywhere might mean. Now, is living like that, living with an idea like that, alive in our imagination, is that a serious calling? Well, as Rilke reminds us, life is a serious business. Here it is. You'll recognize it by its seriousness, he says in the poem. And if we want to see God in all of it, if we want to be participants in something that lasts a lot longer than we will, we need to be open to both beauty and terror, and to not let go of the hand of God while in the grip of either. Do we want to be part of starting something that'll live forever? If we do, one way to imagine how we could do that is to ask ourselves, how can we love what death can steal? How might we love what we can't keep? Because when we do that, the light of God flares up in the world, even when there are no guarantees. Love what death can steal. Love what you can't keep. Flare up in the world, even when there are no guarantees, and get ready to watch God move in the shadows. Peace, everyone.